I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi there, welcome to your weekly dose of inspiration from the High Performance Podcast. Here's what you can expect on this episode.
The thought of not trying my hardest doesn't cross my mind. Like, I'm not looking forward to the pain, but I only know that there's going to be pain because I know I'm going to try my hardest. Like, I'm always going to go to that place and I might be rolling my eyes and dragging my feet, but it's not the session itself. It's just that I know I'm going to push myself and I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to be in the painful place again today. And I don't have any issue getting out of bed on those days because I know it's just part of what I want to be. I always want to be the best version of myself, and I get there through hard work and pushing my body.
We can't wait for this one. A very quick thank you for all the comments about the amazing Marcelino Sambe. If you want to join in the conversation about the podcast, then you can either follow the podcast on Instagram at High Performance. You can follow Damien at Liquid Thinker or follow me at Jake Humphrey. I also want to do a big shout out as ever to Lotus Cars. My relationship with them goes back years. Not only do they produce amazing vehicles, they do it in an amazing county, and you should really follow them across social media at Lotus Cars because they have big plans for 2020 and beyond. Right, here we go then. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for subscribing. Here is this week's High Performance Podcast. Hi there, I'm Jake Humphrey and you're listening to High Performance, the podcast that delves into the minds of some of the most successful athletes, visionaries, entrepreneurs and artists on the planet, and aims to unlock the very secrets of their success. As ever, I'm not alone. Our resident professor and author of Liquid Thinker, Damien Hughes, is with us. And Damien, today's guest operates on a daily basis inside one of the most competitive environments on the planet. What are you looking forward to hearing about?
I'm really excited about today's podcast, Jake. I think I remember reading many years ago, John McEnroe spoke about his journey from the top 10 to number 2 in tennis. He said that was an easier journey to make than going from number 2 to number 1, because it just felt like a completely different challenge. And our guest today is somebody that is actually in the process of making that journey and about sustaining it. So I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, let's find out then. How has she made the journey to where she is today? What are the plans for taking the final step on that journey, as Damien has mentioned just there? And what's it like being someone who has to deal with constant pressure, constant scrutiny, pushing her body to the limit, pushing herself mentally to the limit, and at the same time, acting as a real inspirational role model for young women and indeed young men right across the planet? Let's welcome to the High Performance Podcast, Dina Asher-Smith. Dina, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. And that intro was so, that is honestly the best intro I have ever had. I'm completely serious. Like, I was listening to it, like visionary, all these nice things. I was like, oh, I hope I'm not a letdown.
Right. Well, we'll leave it there then. Perfect.
Yeah,
thanks for joining us.
Let's not ruin it. Let's just end exactly. Here. Yeah, call it a day.
Right. Well, let's get into it then. Come on. We always start the podcast with the same question. And I never like to brief the guests about this question because I want total honesty from them at this point. What is your definition of high performance?
Oh, good question. My definition of high performance, that's a very good question, I guess, is thinking from a sporting world, sporting context, is just operating at the highest possible level and making sure that everything that you do is engineered and geared to make you or whatever the team is, whatever the environment is, the most successful vehicle possible. And it's just meant everything works in sync. It's more like a machine than like a group of people. And to me, that's probably high performance, and everything's just efficient and everything's there for a reason and it works well and you're successful. So, yeah.
There you go. Look, Dina, I think for people listening to this, they can understand high performance from a physical perspective. Okay, you were clearly born with incredible natural ability, but then physically you have to hone that ability. You have to work with your coaches. You have to put in the hours in the gym and make sure you stretch so you're supple and you work on your speed, all the things that come from the physical side of being a high performance athlete. What's really fascinating to Damien, myself, and the people listening to this podcast is how you go from being a young girl at school who enjoys running to being mentally a high performance performer. Can you remember the day when you went from this being something you enjoyed and a bit of a hobby to thinking, right, I need to make this my life. And if I'm going to do that, I need to be 100% dedicated to it.
I think for me, it was more of a process than a day. But I can definitely remember, I guess, key turning points. But to become, I guess, high performance and become more of an elite mindset and taking it from, as you said, kind of like a hobby to something that I want to make a career out of, and then going from having a career to wanting to be the best at what you do. It's definitely a process, and something that my coach, John, who's known me since I was 8 years old and tiny, I think he's definitely had it in his sights since pretty early, probably when I was about 10. But I did not join the Wave Lengths till I was about 17. Yeah, I guess the turning point that I get that you're probably referring to is after I had become a global bronze medalist at the World Championships in Moscow in 2013. I was 17 years old and I had a whirlwind season. I'd done really good personal best times across the 100 and the 200 at the junior level. And I thought that that was going to be just like the end of my season because I was a GB junior. I was looking forward to going on holiday, you know, like typical kind of schoolgirl vibes. Like I was happy. I got what I wanted to, but I knew there was a world championships. But at 17, like you just kind of think, oh yeah, I'm going to watch that at home. And then I got a call to say, oh, do you want to come to the world champs? And I was like, well, oh my God, I don't have any friends. I don't know anybody. Like that was my number one concern. But obviously, yeah, I went and I didn't expect to run because I was part of the relay squad and there's six girls, but I was put on the first leg and I made the strike four. And then we came away with a bronze medal from the championships. And after that, the winter after that, I was nominated for BBC's Young Sports Personality of the Year. And I made the top three. I didn't win, but I made the top three. And I think that process, and particularly being nominated for BBC Young Sports Personality, that made me sit back and go, hang on a second, if the GB senior team think that you're good enough to be selected at such a young age, and because in that process of getting a medal, I think at that point I became like the youngest world medalist like ever, like the world championships across the world I've ever seen. And if GB believe in you to this point, you've done this, and the IAAF are like, congratulations, and BBC think that you're good enough to be nominated alongside career sports people for BBC's Young Spotty, maybe you should take it a bit more seriously. So I remembered I kind of that day I went and looked at my UCAS form and I changed my options to stay in London so I'd stay with my coach. And I remember being like, oh, all my like uni aspirations of where I wanted to go, that's gone straight out the window. And I literally remember the physical changing my UCAS form is like, okay, I better make this career work now, because I was working very hard so I'd have the options to go to some of the best unis in the world. And now I'm changing it for this track and field thing, so I better make it work. That was basically what I was telling myself as I was typing my UCAS form. But
I love that. And Damien, we talk about this a lot. You know, quite often people will only understand their high performance journey when they see the evidence of what their hard work gives them. And it feels like that is exactly what Dina is saying there, is that she was kind of okay until the day the evidence was in front of her that she is making a difference.
Yeah, that's very much been the theme that we've seen, that confidence is often based on evidence that you're capable of doing something. But then that leads us to that interesting question then, Dina, of that when you've been going into territories where you don't have the evidence, that you can be number one at that stage. How do you find evidence when it isn't necessarily so easy to discover?
You don't. Like, that's what I love about kind of what I do in my job. Like, you literally don't know. Like, are you going to win the race? Are you going to be successful? Who knows? But as long as you've done the work, you believe in yourself, and you've done everything within your power, that when you stand on the line, you can put your best foot forward. You just have to hope that whatever you have inside you is the best and is good enough, and you work hard so it is. But ultimately, like, it's track and field. Like, there's seven other women, seven other teams on the track at the same time as you, and they're just as hungry, they've worked just as hard. And sometimes you don't have the evidence. Like, you can have the predictions, you can have the times on paper, indicative things in training, but ultimately, like I always say, the Olympics, the World Championships, and nothing compares to, I'm incredibly biased, but the moment of a track and field championships, and particularly a track and field sprint championships, all bets are off. Like, it's literally what happens in that 10 seconds. And it depends on so many things. It depends on how you handle it. It depends on what your prep's been like, whether you've been completely honest with yourself, and whether you have left every stone unturned and worked really hard. Because ultimately, everybody will see every weakness, whether that's physical or mental, when the gun goes and you've got to race. So quite frankly, like, sometimes you don't, but you can just, you've just got to work really hard within yourself to that you're in the best position possible. And then you just go and do it. Like, that's it.
So can I ask you a question that we asked Dame Kelly Holmes and Dina? We asked her to determine that when she was on the home straight of the 800 metres final, how much of her gold medal came down to physical ability versus how much then came down to the mental ability of being able to still run as hard and as fast under pressure?
I think it might be slightly different for sprinters and middle distance as well, because you have like a different kind of, I guess, a tiredness or whatever. But I love sitting back with my friends and watching track and field, and or even if I'm at a Diamond League, I watch people warm up and they will look fantastic. But I can tell you they're not going to win the race. And they might have it within them. They might be the strongest, the most technically efficient. But if you look at them, you look at their body language, you look at how they're looking at their competitors, and you know that when the gun goes, they're going to get really scared and they're going to tense up and they're not going to run within the best of their ability. So sprinting is very much a mental game. I think it depends on who you are as a person. But I'd say with me, it's probably about 40% mental, 60% physical with me. But that's right, because okay. I'm quite fortunate that I'm quite confident within myself. But yep. I know that, but that's just me, like, as a person in life anyway. But if, say, I wasn't like that, it could go up to 60% mental, 40% physical. Because at the end of the day, with sprinting, you've got to stand on the line and you've got to believe that you have what it takes to win. If I do everything within myself, I can win. Like, you've just got to have that absolute belief. Whether it happens or not, That's out the question. And then that comes to the physical, how you handle yourself, how you go through the motions, whether you hit the distinct points in your race. But it is definitely a mental game, because you have to also have the ability in sprinting that when the pressure's on within the race, that you might have not done all the phases correctly, or your competitors might be right next to you when you're expecting them to be 10 meters behind you at some point in the race. You've got to have the self-confidence to not panic, because as soon as you panic in a race, that is done. It's a beautiful oxymoron in a really weird way, because in sprinting you have to be as relaxed as possible to win, but obviously in a stadium full of 80,000 people, like, it's pretty hard.
So Dame Kelly told us that she felt that it was 20-80, so 20% of it was down to the physical attributes.
Really?
So her point was that, yeah, well, she argued that in that final of the 800 metres, she said there was 0.4 seconds that separated the top four finishers.
That's a good point.
So her point was that everybody was as fast and as strong approximately as each other. So it was 80% of it came down to the mentality of being able to hold your nerve.
That's a good point. No, but it is a lot of holding your nerve. I have to say, it is a lot.
Some of your rivals are quite elaborate and I'm very overtly confident in the way that they strut around before the races.
We're all
and
different.
Have you ever found yourself being intimidated, or has it ever sowed seeds of doubt in you?
Not particularly, no, because I think it's just, I'm going to use a phrase, but it's just believing in your own source, basically. Because, like, you can do all the bravado, you can kind of walk around, you can, people sometimes play mind, well, try and play mind games with you, like, they used to try that when I was a bit younger, but I think, like, I don't mind, like, I'm on my own little wavelength, I'm on my own little vibe, like, that's it, really. Like,
but what mind games would they play with you? Like, what kind of things would they try to do?
I don't know. Some people, like, we all warm up in lanes on a warm-up track, and some people will warm up, like, in your lane, like, come running at you. But
Come in my lane.
I'm one of those people that I kind of hold my lane, hold my space. If you want to run in my lane, it's fine. Like, I'll run straight through you. But I don't care. But that's what I mean. I don't mind. If you're going to come into my space, then I'm not going to give it up. But it's just about believing in yourself and also acknowledging that they're wasting energy if they're actively going out of their way to be something that they're not. If naturally bravado is how they run well, then whatever, like, that's their business and you do you. But at times when people are actively trying to distract you, it actually gives me a bit more confidence. I probably shouldn't be saying this. Please, hopefully none of my rivals listen to this podcast. But no, it gives me more confidence, because if you think about it, so you've been working for 4 years for the Olympic Games. You've got 10 seconds or 11 seconds of Olympic final. You've got your last moments to prepare with your coach and your team around you before you get separated. And in those last moments, you need to be doing everything you need to win, right? And if your rivals choose to try and distract you in that moment, that tells you that they see you as the ultimate barrier. If they believed that they could do it with their own ability without affecting other people, they wouldn't care what you're doing. They literally wouldn't care. They wouldn't care how fast you ran. They wouldn't care whether you were looking good or not. Like, because they'd just be like, I need to focus on me, because as long as I do what I'm going to do, I'm going to win. But if they think to win, she needs to be off her A game and I need to affect that, then that's just telling me that I'm in good shape.
I'm interested in the role of your parents in this, because when I've seen them being interviewed and when I've seen them in the spotlight, say at the Sports Personality of the Year, that was the phrase that I would use to describe your parents. They had a real quiet dignity about them. And
thanks.
I'm interested in their influence in shaping the person standing on that start line 100 metres.
Thank you very much for that. I'm going to put that in our little group chat. They will be really happy that you said that. So thank you very much. And yeah, my parents, obviously, we're a really, really close, tight-knit family, and they've kind of been the foundation of everything, alongside my coach, John, who's known me since I was 8. So outside my parents, it's them, probably John as well. I think I'm very fortunate that I come from a very strong foundation, and I'm not trying to say that that's better or whatever than anybody else, but that definitely is an advantage, because I know that if it goes well, fantastic. My parents are super proud. My friends are happy. If it doesn't, then I try again next time. But my parents are still going to love me the same. I've still got the same friends. Nothing goes away. I've always got my foundation and I know who I am. And like, I'm happy with who I am. So I don't have to step outside of my character to kind of achieve something, because I know that my friends and family are going to be cool. And ironically, if I step outside my character, my parents will be like, who on earth was that on the track today? We did not bring up a child like this. But
they just seem incredibly impressive people, and I was interested in the kind of lessons that they passed over to you.
Yeah, they've taught me a lot. They taught me the value of hard work consistently since I was younger, and just to enjoy every day and take every opportunity that comes at you, and be very grateful for every time I get to step on the track, and be very grateful that, in the nicest way, the most stressful thing in my life on a day-to-day basis is getting from A to B very quickly. That's it. Like, it's a good life. I can't complain. I'm going to work very hard to be the best at it. But if it's not the end of the world.
it's a lovely phrase, actually, that, for keeping what you do in perspective. Because there's one way of looking at it, which is appearing on the global stage, running in front of millions of people at home, running in front of tens of thousands of people in the stadium, trying to fulfil the dreams of my teachers and my parents and my friends.
And the nation.
Or you can go running from A to B as quick as possible.
Yeah.
It's a great way to describe
it. Well,
it is.
I mean, I always try and... I think I've always had the perspective of that I'm an entertainer, and sport is a special type of entertainment, whereas it is our lives and it is really important and it is something that we work on day in, day out. It's a lifestyle. So it is a very intense form of entertainment, and we can't lose that. It's just remembering that it's all fun and games in the nicest way. But obviously I'm very serious about it, and we're all fun and games.
We have a phrase in our family, Dina, which I'm kind of sensing, maybe without having the same phrase, you have the same feeling from your family. So this was passed on to me by my parents, and I've got two little kids, and we try and do the same thing with them. And it is roots and wings. So you're giving your kid the wings to go and fly and do amazing stuff and conquer the world and have no barriers. At the same time, you've given them roots to know that as you go on that journey, you've always got the roots back here. And if you need to come back here at any time, this is your base.
Yeah, that's definitely that. My dad, I've moved out of my house like a few years ago now, and every single week my dad still asks me if I want to move back in. So I definitely feel that I have very, very strong roots. My dad's like, are you sure? Like, are you sure? We do miss you. I'm like, it's okay, Dad. I'm still coming around. But seriously, yeah, definitely that is something that I identify with. And I think in that I am very fortunate. And I think that probably on a psychological basis, it does give me quite a competitive advantage in a way, because yes, I'm hungry. Yes, I want to win. Don't mistake that. But at the same time, I know that, yeah, I have a firm, loving foundation. So if I don't, it's not going to ruin my self-esteem, self-confidence. My world isn't going to collapse. I'm just going to try again and try and get better and make a more successful attempt next time.
That's really interesting, Dana, because on our previous series of the podcast, there was a clip that went viral from the footballer Robin Van Persie. And it was some advice that he gave his 14-year-old son. And I think he spoke about, he's presented his son with the choice of being a winner or a loser in life. But I think the bit that a lot of people really connected with was the psychological safety that he presented beforehand of saying, listen, I'll love you regardless of whatever route you go down as a parent. My job is just to love you.
Yeah.
But you have to make the choices of which pathway you want to pursue in terms of making excuses or taking that accountability.
Yeah, definitely. I like the idea of accountability and lack of excuses. That is a huge part of my life. I really try and make sure that I'm completely accountable for whatever happens on track, whether it's good or bad. I take responsibility for it, because I think when you're in this position and you have a talent or a gift and you have all, and that paired with opportunity, so you are fit and you have the races and you are in the shape to potentially go and do good things, then the easy things to control are stuff that you need to hold yourself accountable for. So whether that's working hard, training, eating right, sleeping right, living the right kind of lifestyle, so that means not clubbing 4 days a week or whatever, it just means holding yourself to a very high standard. But yeah, accountability is essential, because sometimes you've been given these gifts, you've been given these opportunities that other people would love to have, and you can't do yourself disservice, you can't do all the people that have invested in you a disservice by simply just not holding yourself accountable and not working hard or not being as dedicated as you should be.
And where do you stand on the theme of responsibility? Because I'm a firm believer in the 100% responsibility mindset. So everything to do with your athletics and your world that you exist in, and this can apply to anyone not in sport or not in athletics, just listening to the pod, is that if you can say, right, every little element of my life, I am going to take 100% responsibility for, rather than looking at coaches to blame or looking at things that happen on the track or yeah. the wind direction or little injuries I picked up, right?
Yeah.
If you can avoid all of those excuses and just take 100% responsibility, it's a really powerful mindset to get into,
yeah.
I think. I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, that is honestly how I conduct my life, and it's 100% responsibility. I understand that sometimes to be able to take 100% responsibility, you do have to have the financial freedom, particularly in our sport, to make decisions for yourself. So that means going out and making sure you can eat the best food, you live somewhere where you can have the best lifestyle, that you can afford the best physio treatment and stuff like that. That also comes into it. So I understand that.
But you don't think that even without those things, you can still take 100% responsibility for what you have in your world?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that... I think that ultimately is a big deciding factor on whether somebody is successful, particularly in track and field, or not. Because at the end of the day, it's about not making excuses. I'm one of those people that when people go, oh, it was so windy, I didn't do well. And I'm like, mm-mm. If it was that windy, then you shouldn't have raced. Like, if it was so windy that you had to like have a problem with it, then you shouldn't have raced. If it was that windy, if you decided to race, if you stepped on the track, if you stepped up to the line, then you're telling everybody that I'm ready to go. And yeah, sometimes the time won't be what you want it to be. And there might be genuine reasons for that, but it doesn't mean you have to make an excuse or blame somebody. And yeah, if you're going to make excuses or you want to blame somebody else, then you shouldn't have been on the line that day. So yeah.
Dina, can we explore the relationship you have with John Blackie, your coach? Because again, these themes that you're talking about are themes that I imagine John has helped embed within you. Now, I'm often intrigued at the fact that John has gone through seeing you at 8 years old to now seeing you in these elite finals. And your relationship has obviously had to evolve and develop. Would you just tell us a bit more about it?
John, well, I don't even know how to start with John. He is very much like a second dad to me, 100%. That is how I would describe our relationship overall. But he puts it better than me, and he says that we've evolved from, like, I guess, like a parent and child relationship when I was younger, where he would literally tell me what to do and I'd be like, okay, to now I've got a bit older and I understand things to more of a partnership. So we'll have very much respectful, equal conversation is what we want to do, how is best to tackle problems, what goals, what aims we want to go for, what we think we have to work on, how we improve something, whether something should be brought into the team, taken out of the team, and what the best method forward is. But yeah, John is, there are not enough positive words in the world to describe John. I'm incredibly grateful for all the time that he spent with me and the belief that he's had in me since I was so young, because yeah, it takes a special kind of person to have seen somebody at 8 years old and gone, yeah, I see something in that one, just don't let her get hurt and don't let her get bored of the sport. That's basically what he's been saying since I was 8 years old, and he's just gradually been really patient with both my physical and mental development, adding things in when they needed to be, not pushing me into anything, not kind of pushing me to do stuff that I'm not ready for. And I think the most important thing about my relationship with John is that I hand on heart know that he wouldn't let me do anything, or he wouldn't put me in a position that I couldn't handle that. And I think that's a big confidence boost as well, because if John says you can do it, that means I can do it. Like, because he's known me for so long, he knows, even if I'm not in the mood for something or I might be a bit upset or whatever, he knows how to pick me up. He knows when to push me, when to step back. And yeah, ultimately, if John says we're ready, then we're ready to go. Yeah.
And from a parenting perspective, because as parents, we often struggle with things like this. You kind of, you want to push your child as far as you can down a direction that you know they might love. But at the same time, kind of have a realization that if it's not for them, you do need to accept that and step back. So from the total reverse, really, what has John done from your perspective that we as parents can employ and be like, right, that's how you inspire and push an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old without making it too much?
It's a good question. I think the most important thing is having fun when they're 9, 10, 11. Like, honestly, they just need to enjoy it, because there's no point pushing anybody to do anything if they're not enjoying it. Like, they're not going to work hard. They're going to be miserable. They might get results if they're super talented, but they're going to run away from you and never talk to you again when they're done. Like, there are far more important things in life than just being successful and getting results. I know that sounds really weird to say on this podcast, but it's true. Like, even looking at the times that we're in, we can see there are far more important things than just being the best at something.
So when did he then turn the conversation from, hey, Dina, enjoy the race, to, right, Dina, we need to win this race? When did that
So he does that now and again. He still does that to me now. I think it's because John is so chilled all the time. The best, most recent example of that I have is the 2018 European Championships in Berlin. I remember I did my semi-final in the 100 and my start was appalling. I was like a snail and I was panicking. And normally, if that had been a diamond league, John would have been like, come on, Dina, what was that like? Come on, we're trying to run a race here. We're not going to the supermarket. Like, ha, 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 you know? And it would have been banter. But I was panicking because obviously, like, that was the focal point of my season. And I understand that the way you set up your semi-final often dictates how the final goes. So I was a bit like, so John, that start wasn't good. He was like, oh, yeah, it wasn't the best. And then I said, so what we're going to do, we're going to practice blocks. Like, we're going to kind of get ready for the next race. He was like, no, just going to go. You're going to go out there next time and do your normal start. And then he was like, that's all I want you to do. Just go there. Normal start. I don't want to talk about it again. I was like, okay. He's like, we're not doing blocks. We're not doing 3-point. We're just going to warm up, really? Relax, chill. You're going to go out there and do like what you normally do. And we're going to call it a day. I was like, oh. And then I went out there and I had the best start of my career and I won. that's kind of affirming that what you already have within you, what you need to do to win. And it's that idea of the self-confidence. And because sometimes in major finals, people feel like they have to outperform themselves and do the best that they've ever done to win. And don't get me wrong, physically you do, but psychologically for some people, that's not the best way to go into it. So yeah. He knows me and he knew that I just needed to have a bit more confidence in my own ability, really. And just
great
go
story.
Out there and yeah, it needed to be special and it needed to be good, but you don't need to tell me to do that because I'll panic. So he told me, yeah, just go out there, do what you normally do, it's going to be fine. And it was that psychological insight and that nuance in a coaching relationship is something that you do get after, as your coach has known you for what, 16 years now. It's a very close relationship, but it's ultimately like, yeah, it's a very, very valuable tool.
And Damien, from a psychological perspective, that is really an important lesson there, isn't it? Because it would have been very easy for Dina's coach to suddenly be like, right, I need to flood her with information about what a good start yeah. is and how you get one and remind her of all the things she's learned over the life. But instead, he did the absolute opposite. And basically, without saying it, he just said to her, you know how to do it. You've done it before, do it again. That's interesting, Damien.
That to me is a sign of a master coach, of an expert, that they can take all that wisdom and that knowledge and just communicate in the simplest possible terms. As Dina was describing it there, I was reminded of Sebastian Coe talks about his dad was his coach, and in the 1980 Moscow Olympics when he'd failed so spectacular in his chosen event, and then 2 days later he faced Steve Ovett in the 1500 metres, and his dad had just said to him, stay with Steve Ovett until you can smell his armpits. And again, it seems like a really funny phrase to use, but Seb Coe speaks about that phrase, just smell his armpits until the final 100 metres and then run past him. But it was about taking a complex race strategy and just making it as simple as possible. There's something inherently genius about John's work to be able to do
I'll
that.
Tell him that too.
Moment.
Be well happy for him a genius. He won't shut up about that. Yeah.
No, but I think it is the ability to be able to communicate clearly under pressure that he would inevitably have felt is a sign of his own strength as a coach.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, because ultimately when it comes to those big moments and the bigger the stage, sometimes the simpler the cues need to be. If you've got too much flying around your head in arguably what is going to be one of the most important moments of your life, then it's a bit too much, isn't it? Sometimes you just got to go out there and do it and not overthink it.
Correct.
So I think a lot of John's technique is making sure that I'm relaxed, I'm chilled, and ultimately I believe in myself, and that when I go out there, I'm in the right mindset to go and achieve what I need to achieve or what I can achieve. And yeah, for him, that's making sure I'm chilled, happy and laughing. So, yeah.
Have you noticed a difference, Andina, now that, like previously on your journey, you've been chasing after that number one, that gold medal, that spot? Have you noticed a difference since the World Championships last year?
No. I think it's because, I don't know how to put this, but I've never really been much of a chaser, if that makes sense. I love being the underdog, as in like I love outperforming expectations.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's show is brought to you in association with Mindlift, the most personalized brain training app that can help improve your focus and your relaxation. So Mindlift is neuroscience based. And what I love about Mindlift, I've been using it for a while now, is that it's totally personalized to me. So if you're interested in optimizing your health, I would recommend you check out Mindlift.
And don't just take my word for it. Take the word of the elite athletes and the industry leaders who use it. So MindLift accesses brain sensing technology, games and videos that correspond to your brain's activity. Honestly, it's fascinating. You wear a smart headband which measures your brain activity and gets you a personalized routine to sharpen your mental fitness. I've been using it first thing in the morning, and genuinely, when I go into early meetings or I've got lots happening in a day, I notice the difference. I'd love you to start your personalized program at mindlift.com/high performance and you will get $40 off your first subscription. That's mindlift.com/high performance.
But I'm always just trying to see where I can go. Like I've never thought I need to beat that person, because the way I see it is like, yeah, you've got the best, you've got the titans of sprinting, but they're not infallible. So all you need to actually do is do the best that you can, because you don't know where that's going to land you. Like, yeah, that could land you in eighth place. That's not fab. You need to go and work harder. But also, if you focus on yourself, somebody else might be having a bad day, or the people that's previously number one, she might have a terrible race. But if you were just chasing her, you're more watching what's happening. And if she's behind you, then suddenly you have to flip your switch in the middle of the race and go for it. So for me, I've always just been focusing on myself. And so my targets have always been trying to break different time barriers. And gradually, if you kind of focus on that, you focus on yourself, your technique, your time, how you run the races, as you get better and better, that's going to push you further and further up the podium. Like, that's just how it works. But it's only in the past 3 years that John has really started talking about like medals and positions and stuff like that.
Is that helpful given the sport that you compete in also, was that sometimes you must hear rumours of other athletes that maybe are pushing the boundaries of what's legal and what's fair, and that must seem like a coping mechanism to be able to just focus on your race and forget what anybody else is doing.
Yeah, speaking between the lines, most definitely. I think that is, because quite frankly, in track and field, I say it kind of guarded at all times, but you never know what people are going to run. You'd never, ever, ever. And obviously we want to win, we want to become world champions, we want to become the Olympic champions, but ultimately you can only ever control what you're doing. And you might be running fantastically fast, but you might come third. And obviously we want to win. I don't want to sound defeatist, but you also have to be content with doing everything that you can do. And you have to be content with doing everything that's within your physical capacity that you can do. Obviously, if that brings you the gold medal, great, that's what you came for, fantastic. But sometimes that brings you the bronze medal, and yeah, you're going to be upset because you went out there aiming for gold, but you can't have your self-esteem tied to the gold medal, because you can never control what's happening around you. Sure. And now you understand the intricacy of the, whenever I say that on TV, you understand the messaging.
That distinction then between having the outcome of a gold medal or a world title versus the performance of just go and give your very best. On those mornings where you know that you're going to get flogged out and it's going to be physically draining and you're exhausted, what gets you out of bed on those mornings when you know you're going to suffer if it's not the outcome of a gold medal?
I honestly don't think like that. Like, I think I've just been doing it for so long that I don't, that the thought of not trying my hardest doesn't cross my mind. Like, I'm not looking forward to the pain, but I only know that there's going to be pain because I know I'm going to try my hardest. Like, I'm always going to go to that place, and I might be rolling my eyes and dragging my feet, but it's not the session itself. It's just that I know I'm going to push myself, and I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to be in the painful place again today. And I don't have any issue getting out of bed on those days, because I know it's just part of what I want to be. I always want to be the best version of myself, and I get there through hard work and pushing my body. That's how I feel. And I know it sounds really weird to a lot of people, and I know loads of people never believe me. They just think she's trying to like cover up and try and pretend that she's perfect all the time. Like, I'm not, definitely. But I think I've just trained my mind over the years, like, pain in what I do, pushing myself, and the pain that I'm going to feel is inevitable. There's no point waking up every morning and thinking, oh God, I'm going to be in pain today, because it's going to be the same tomorrow and the next day and 6 days a week. So if you keep thinking that, you're going to be just groaning and moaning, and you're going to end up praying for retirement, because it's just so, like, every day is like, oh.
So is it about having a clear rationale of why you're doing it?
Yeah.
So it's not suffering for the sake of it. It's suffering for a clear purpose.
That's basically it. You're suffering for a purpose and understanding that, unfortunately, I've chosen an aspiration that comes with a lot of suffering. Like, the rewards can be great, but, like, unfortunately, the downside is that I have to be in pain quite often, and that's something that I made peace with when I was, like, 13, so...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's a lovely quote, isn't there? I think it's an Einstein quote that says, you know, he who can understand the why can endure any what. So it's almost like, as long as you know why you're doing it, you can get through anything.
Yeah, Einstein's a good man, I'm joking. I knew he was onto something. But no, that's literally it, yeah. So I hope that does make sense when I say I never have, like, that moment when I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered to get, like, I just don't have it because I've made peace with it and I know why I'm going to be in pain. I understand it. And definitely the feeling of the adrenaline rush when you're in a packed stadium and the lights go down, everybody's silent before, like, the 100-meter final. I know it sounds crazy, but there's no better feeling than standing on the line and knowing that you've worked to the absolute maximum capacity. You have to control the next 10 seconds within the best of your ability, but you've done everything you can.
And when you're on the start line, Dina, do you have total belief that the next 10 seconds is going to go well, regardless of injuries and other bits and pieces? Because I'm a big believer in, what's the point in thinking it's not going to go well?
100%. That is something that I've been working on, I guess, as well, over the past few years as well. Because ironically, you make it more likely, because it's like a bit like manifestation. Like, if you believe you're going to do a good start, you have a higher chance of doing a good start.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, I always say, if you believe you will, you might. If you believe you won't, you probably won't. And that's the, you know, at least give yourself a chance, right? Life kicks us all when we're down anyway. Why would you do it to yourself?
Exactly. Like, there's seven other people on the line that's trying to see me fail, so I might as well believe in myself.
Yes. Yeah, don't, like, make I'm it eight people against
me.
You, right?
Exactly. I'm the one that's got me. I need to at least believe in myself, because I know those other girls won't want you to be doing well. So, yeah.
I get a sense that you're so comfortable in the role that you have as a sprinter. Is there any element of this job that is not easy for you? I mean, I wonder whether it's the social media scrutiny or people assuming if you're having an amazing photo shoot for Vanity Fair, it must have taken your eye off what you're doing. Maybe it's the fact that, you wrote a really beautiful article for The Telegraph about Black Lives Matter and the murder of George Floyd in America. Does everything come easy to you? Or are there still areas of life that are a kind of daily struggle?
No, everything definitely doesn't come easy to me, 100%. And I think the most difficult thing for me to get used to has actually been being higher profile and being in the spotlight. Because nobody believes me, but especially if you talk to people I went to school with, I'm painfully shy. Like, I really... yeah. But I understand that in the job that I'm in, you can't be painfully shy. Like, it doesn't work. People, and if you're painfully shy, people will project onto you why you're painfully shy, and particularly in sprinting, sometimes it's just useful to be yourself and present yourself rather than let people guess. So I'm shy. When I was at school, I was one of those people. I'm still now very happy sitting at the back of the room and not really saying much. Like, if I'm comfortable, I'll do it. And obviously, if I have to speak, I will speak.
But why do we see that, though? Why do we see that as not as good as outgoing people? Why is it? I've got a shy son and I apologize for him. Why
oh,
do I
no.
do that? I know. And I've stopped doing it.
But I think it just depends on the industry you're in, and it depends on also what you want to get out of it as well. Because I think the hardest thing for me to deal with, and it's hand in hand with this, is that as an athlete, especially as a female athlete, you have no idea whether you're going to be high profile or not. We don't sign up for the fame. Like, as an athlete, nobody, particularly in track and field, nobody is going and running and pushing themselves and going to their very limits 6 days a week for fame. Like, nobody is doing it for fame. Like, there's other ways to be famous that are far less stressful, far less painful.
So how do you deal with it, Dina?
I guess I deal with it by just kind of normalizing it. And I think social media is something that is, I think it is very difficult for quite a few people that are higher profile, and particularly the ones that might be a bit more naturally shy or might be a bit more, they never expected to kind of be in this position. So the idea that somebody can type a message to them, and because people don't see you as real, which is the thing. Like, people kind of always see you as through a TV screen. They don't see you as an actual person with emotion. So people kind of just say what they want, like, all the time, which people are free to do, but, like, doesn't mean that A, there shouldn't be consequences, and B, it doesn't mean that I have to read it. So for me on social media, I'm very much more of somebody that puts stuff out there rather than receives. So I have the accounts, but I don't spend my time scrolling them, especially over this pandemic with all the news all the time all over Twitter. I've pretty much taken myself off Twitter. Like, I'll put stuff out there and I'll post stuff that's important, but I won't scroll my feed. And Instagram, I follow all my friends in track, but I have, like, most people that I either compete with or they're genuine track friends, I have them all muted, and I have, like, loads of fashion and dresses and stuff that I like outside of track as well. Because I think it's also that escapism and making sure that you maintain the balance. But yeah, as you can see by my body language, that is definitely something that I'm still getting used to.
But is that not unusual amongst your peer group, Dina?
It's very normal. Very, very normal. Sometimes I do feel sorry as well for some of my colleagues who might even behind the scenes have stuff like Asperger's and stuff, but they're not comfortable. But then people will mock them for being uncomfortable, and they think they're hiding something because they're uncomfortable, but really they just don't understand they have, like, Asperger's or something, because they're just trying to run, you know? And that is something that, yeah, it's hard to deal with for a lot of us.
Going back to the social media thing, I saw a brilliant article the other day, and it was basically saying that we all spend hours and hours thinking, should I eat this food? Is this healthy? Is this carbohydrates at the right time of day? Blah, blah, blah. None of us apply that filter to what we look at on our phones. So we're kind of almost eating junk food for our brains by looking at accounts that are bad for us, watching other people's lives taken through a filter. And you're then comparing other people's filtered lives to your own reality. And of course it doesn't look as good. And then that's really bad for your health.
Of course you're sitting on your sofa like, oh, why don't I look like that? Because I'm probably the person that doesn't look like that either. Like, they've been photoshopped and zoomed and sucked in as well. They don't even look like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I saw this quote that said, it's never been harder to be ourselves because it's never been easier for other people to pass judgment.
Yeah, I actively try and limit what I take in. I actively try and control whether it's good or bad. And that also comes into track, because I don't need to be seeing the people that I'm racing, what they're doing in training. Like, why do I need to know what the girls that I'm racing is doing in December? Like, I like them, so I'm not going to cause a feud and unfollow them, but I don't need to see it. We're all unique, and it's a sport where you can 100% be yourself, and people just line you up and see which self is the best. It's about making it work for you, and yeah, there's no point comparing because we're all different.
And as someone with a 100% responsibility mindset, what they do has no impact on what you do anyway, right?
Of course,
do your thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Look, we've pretty much reached the end, Dina, but we always finish with a little quick fire round. So I'll go first. Good luck. They're easy. Three non-negotiable behaviours that you and the people around you have to buy into.
Oh, honesty. Even if you've made a mistake, I want to know the mistake. I don't want you to cover it up. So be upfront, be honest, be responsible as well. So if I'm putting my best foot forward, I would really like you to put your best foot forward as well. I don't want you to be kind of late or lazy or kind of half doing stuff, because if I'm lying on the track really exhausted, you should be as well. And good vibes, positivity. I don't want to little black cloud around me. Like, I'm not a little black cloud. I'm a very sunny, happy person, but I'm also an empath. So if you're a black cloud, I will become a black cloud too. So everybody needs to be on their best behavior. That's not being artificial. Doesn't mean you have to be like that every time. Of course, you will have our down times, but definitely more ups than downs.
What advice would you give a teenage Dina just starting out?
Have fun. Definitely keep smiling, have fun, be patient, because definitely when I was a teenager, I was one of those people that I'd do like 5 press-ups and I'd be like, why are my arms still looking like this? Like, why don't I have like huge guns? So be patient and consistently work hard, because patience and hard work come in hand on hand. Like, you might do a tough session, but it doesn't mean that you're going to instantly be faster the next day. You need to consistently work hard and be patient with it, and then the fruits of your labour will show.
I think I know the answer to this one. Are you happy?
Yes, of course I am. I'm very fortunate that all my family and friends have been okay in this crisis, in this coronavirus crisis, and I'm fit, I'm healthy. The Olympics will, fingers crossed, be a spectacle next year, and I'm hoping that I'm going to be in fantastic shape. And yeah, of course I am. It's all good. Life's good.
How important is legacy for you?
At the moment, I really want to win. That I'm not really thinking about legacy. I guess I'm thinking a bit single-minded, short-term. I want to win. I want to win now because I've surpassed so many of my own expectations that I had. Like, I'd never thought I'd be an international. Always wanted to go to the Olympics. Didn't think I was going to go to the Olympics. Definitely never thought I was going to be a world champion. So you might as well go the whole way now. And the legacy thing, I haven't thought about that yet.
I think deal with the running and the legacy may well just take care of itself.
Hopefully.
Final one for people who are listening to this. And it's obviously your whole life is sport and sprinting and athletics, but this is for anyone doing any job in any walk of life. What is your one golden rule to living a high performance life? What's the one sort of final message you'd like people to take away from this podcast?
Be happy, be positive, but also be smart. Shortcuts aren't there. Shortcuts don't. No, that's a big no from me. Though you do things properly, do things cleverly with that's not a good word either, but yeah, be smart, no shortcuts, and enjoy the ride.
Brilliant. Listen, it has been an absolute pleasure to sit and chat to you. Your zest for life radiates over the laptop. I wish we could have done these in person, but
yeah,
you know, for
sorry.
Various reasons it's not
training
possible.
Program
no, it's not
is
at all.
Back on properly.
But I'm just glad the technology exists so we're able to still have this conversation.
No, seriously, Dina, just to echo what Jake said, I think it's been really inspiring and a real treat just to sit down with you. So thank you for making the time.
That's all right. Thank you for having me and thank you for thinking of me. And I hope you get that number one spot on the podcast list in the coming year.
That's what we're all after, isn't it? That's what we're all after.
Number one.
Damien.
Jake.
You know, when you just meet people and they just radiate sort of not even just positivity, just almost some ethereal thing that you can't put your finger on, but they make you feel good.
Yeah, definitely. We spoke about this before, haven't we, after we met Ant Middleton, and he spoke about how the Royal Marines divide people up into energy sappers and energizers, people that just light up a room when they walk in, as opposed to people that light up a room when they walk out. And Dean was very much somebody that just lit up a room when she walked into it. It was, she's left us with a warm feeling afterwards.
Amazing. And what, you know, getting down to the sort of the crux of what High Performance Podcast is about, one thing that really stood out to me was she had a huge smile on her face when talking about the pressure of standing on the start line of a race. It wasn't like, oh yeah, when we stand on the start line. She goes, oh, I love it. Yeah, the start of it. She is psychologically perfect in that respect for being a sprinter and for dealing with that very public and very personal moment, which you get all at the same time at the start of a race.
Yeah, I think, you know, a big theme that's come across in our podcast has been how people can reframe a certain situation, whether it's they've had a disastrous performance and they can reframe it as feedback, or we've interviewed people that have had disabilities and they've then seen it as a strength. And I think the way that Dina reframes pressure and sees it as a privilege is, a great competitive advantage to her when she's finding herself on that start line of 100 or 200 metre final.
Amazing. And I think that she's obviously been fortunate that she has amazing parents and she's landed with an incredible coach. But I also often think that people make those things happen for themselves, you know?
Yeah, very much. I think we often talk about opportunity versus preparation leads to high performance. And I think she's had the opportunity to, like you say, be blessed with great parents and a great coach in John Blackie. But she's had to then do the preparation of, like you say, for going away to university and or for going the nights out with her friends to be able to give herself the opportunity of then delivering high performance. Yeah, I think, and she can recognise how important those environmental factors have been in it. But let's not mistake that. I think that phrase that she spoke about, that complete accountability for them making the most of those opportunities, is something that is a very special mindset.
She's almost the sort of perfect subject for this podcast, isn't she? Because she is clearly 100% all about putting the pressure on herself, not allowing excuses in, not blaming anybody else, being totally responsible for the journey and the path that not just her life takes, but that her career takes as well.
Yeah, and I think for any listeners on this one, I think there's a big area to look at in terms of that message she gave about social media and the parallels of competing in a 100-meter final and that, which is stay in your own lane. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't let other people's noise distract you from you going out there and just doing the best that you can do with what you've got at that moment in time.
I feel good for the chat, don't you?
I do. I've come away from it really feeling I've got a spring in my step, which is a really special ingredient that somebody can offer that.
Well, thanks for being part of it as ever.
Oh, thanks, Jake. Loved it.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with the remarkable Dina Asher-Smith. I just want to say, if you have the time, it really, really helps us if you can leave a review or you can subscribe to the podcast or even just rate us. The way the algorithms work, it means more people can see the podcast and more people can be inspired. So please, by doing that little bit for us, you help to share the podcast far and wide. Also, thanks so much for sending in your questions after last week's episode. So Damien and I are about to dive once again into your digital post bag and fire through a few of the questions. Damien, what have you got there?
Okay, Jay. Well, the first question I've got comes on Instagram from Desmond Mace that asks, what's the best advice you've ever got? And for you, Jay, what's the best advice you've ever given? So from my point of view, the best advice that I've ever received is somebody gave me a quote years ago from the is attributed to the Dalai Lama that says, when you talk to somebody, you're just repeating what you already know. When you listen, you might learn something new. So it's something I always try and keep in mind of just be open-minded and come with your ears open to listen to somebody.
Brilliant. The best advice I've ever given is something I always say to a lot of people. I get messages every single day on my social media from people that want to be a TV presenter. And the world is full of people telling you that it's hard or it's unlikely or it's not going to happen or it only happens to a very few people and they're really lucky. I always give the total opposite advice, and this applies to anybody, whether they want to be a CEO of a FTSE 100, a top level sports person, or they just want to be a TV presenter like me. Why not you? And I always say the same thing, it could be you. And I always think that's a really strong bit of advice, because then as soon as you think, well, why not me? Well, you know, I would say someone has to be on the telly doing my job in 10, 15 years. It's probably not going to be me. So why not you? And I think the message really is, make sure it's you. Let me read through a few other messages that have come in. Raj Real Estate says, Marcelino Sambe seems to be an astonishingly centered individual for someone so young. Lots of messages coming in actually about Marcelino and how amazing he was. John O.A. Marston 24 left us a review on Apple Podcasts. He said, I'll be honest, when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, another business person trying to sell us with hope and desire to seize the day, blah, blah, blah. How wrong I was. It's so much more than that. Mondays have not been the same since I've started listening to this. It's not only good for those in the business world, but everyday life too. So thank you, all of you, for your reviews. I've got a question here. It comes from Sriraj_1. How do you strike a balance between working hard for a goal and your social life with friends? What do you think, Damien?
Oh, what a brilliant question that is. I think it's a difficult one because, you know, a lot of people that we've met on the podcast have been almost obsessive in pursuing it. But I do think that it's essential that it's balanced to help us have a more rounded personality and understand that rest and downtime are an important part of the process of going for a goal.
Yeah, I'll give you one that I often use when I'm going on holiday because I struggle to unwind. My father-in-law said to me, another way of saying recreation is re-creation. Recreation is recreation. So in other words, you're stepping back to just recreate, to build, to go again. And the other thing I would say for people when they're toying with the sort of challenge of personal life and business life is not only is that going to be solved anyway by making sure that your business or your working life or whatever you're involved in is one of your interests, because it will attract other people with similar interests. So actually you'll find the people you're going out for dinner with and drinking with and having barbecues with are people that actually you work with, but you're actually mates more than anything else. And also personal relationships, as you know, Damien, are absolutely key. So by fostering personal relationships with people that you work with, they naturally become your friends. You know, don't hide behind emails, don't hide behind phone calls. Personal relationships, I think, is key.
Yeah, I think it's massive. And like, just as you're saying it there, Jake, a metaphor comes to mind that's relevant for you, that Formula One is the fastest sport in the world, and it's won by those that can learn to take their pit stops and most effectively. You know, and I think that's a metaphor for all of us, that however fast life is, we all need a pit stop to recharge, and I like that idea of recreation.
Love it. You got another question?
Yep, I've got one here from, this is a really interesting one given what's happened this week, from Matt Mizowski, that says, he's a massive Liverpool fan and looking at what makes Klopp successful. And is it possible to transfer him into a corporate environment as a CEO, and would he be a success? So the essence is, can a high-performing sports manager become a high-performing CEO, and what are the benefits and risks?
Great question. I mean, the two things that spring to mind to me, Damien, are the things that we've been told so much on this podcast from people. The first one is absolute relentlessness. I would say pretty much every guest has talked about relentlessness. And there's a guest coming up in the next few episodes, and he will talk a lot about consistency. It's great to be relentless, but if you're relentless for a week out of 52, you're not going to be a success. It's about combining relentlessness with consistency and making sure that you recreate and take a pit stop when you need to.
Yeah, and I'd echo that I was fortunate enough, a few years ago I interviewed two guys, Ferran Soriano and Cheeky Begirdestain, that were at Barcelona and appointed Pep Guardiola there and have done the same at City. And they told me that they'd spoken to Warren Buffett, the American advisor, about what to look for when they were recruiting a head coach. And Buffett's advice was similar to what you'd look for in a football coach. Three things: energy, which Klopp obviously possesses, knowledge or technical expertise, which he obviously does, and then the third one is integrity. Do they role model the behaviours that they're asking everyone else to do? And I think when you see Klopp, he's very endearing, he's high energy, and he's relentless as well. So, yeah, I think those principles can certainly transfer.
I love that. Listen, thanks so much, everyone, for all your questions and also leaving so many reviews. I've got one here from James2209, who says, this podcast inspires my work, my home, and my coaching life. As a result of this pod, I no longer blame the company for not having a strategy. I am responsible for forming one. There you go, Damien. Real world impact. Listen, I know you're on holiday, so are we still going to be chatting on Sunday evening, 8 o'clock on Instagram?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Listen, top man, Damien, thank you all of you for your reviews, for subscribing, for being part of the High Performance family. And the two of us will see you for another episode very soon. Cheers, Damien.
Cheers, Jay.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.